Welcome, everyone. It's great to have you on our call today, and we are looking at the subject of households of faith and family networks. It's a big topic, and we're a group of friends that have traveled a faith journey with Jesus over many years, and this theme of households of faith is really near and dear to each of our hearts. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions here and have anyone jump in that would like to. Around our circle here, initially are Jim and Alex and Sandy and myself, Ross, and Henry should be joining us shortly. And to start our time off, I'd like to ask the question, what comes to your mind when you hear the term household of faith?
Well, let me jump in here. To me, it's a place where I am known and we share our journey together. And so, in some ways, that's quite flexible. We might not actually think of living under the same roof, but I am well known to them and we share, and they to us, and we share our journey together.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Someone else.
Well, I'm the same as Jim mentioned. I agree with what he said, but I also think of back sometimes in the New Testament where they referred to the, or at least they talked about the whole household, and it was family, it was servants, but there was Christ followers in that household, and they saw it and they watched it. So I guess it's focused more on the household aspect of it, but it's a great way for observers and family members to see what's going on in the life of a believer in Jesus Christ.
And it's interesting when we think of it, I don't think it necessarily implies that all the members of a family are followers of Jesus. There might be very young children involved. There may be some who are seekers. There may be, some who are away from faith. And so I don't think it means sort of something 100% united in a purposeful vision for following Jesus, but it just seems that the tilt of the family has a bias toward faith and the things of God, and I think that's that gives a lot of meaning and purpose, and everyone's at a different point in their either seeking or in their walk with Christ. So it's a really big subject. Now, when you think about that, in the scriptures, an awful lot is talked about in terms of family networks, and I haven't often thought of that. I've often thought that faith is so much an individual thing, but it just seems that throughout the scriptures, God used family networks to accomplish great, great things in several generations. There's a couple that come right to mind, of course, going back to Abraham and his family, and God was setting him aside to actually become the father. They would be the father and mother of a great nation, and through their family, God said all the nations on the earth would be blessed. That's from Genesis 12:3. And so just this idea that any one of our families has potential to be used by God to be a blessing well beyond ourself. And that passage in Genesis 12 speaks of, I will bless you and make you a blessing. So there's so much God gives to us, but it's not just for us, but it's for us to pass through and pass forward to others. We see that a couple of generations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. You look at Jacob's household, and through Jacob and his 12 sons, who became the patriarchs of Israel, you see a great kingdom breakthrough in that family unit. And despite all the dysfunction and rivalry in that family, God, even starting with Jacob, renamed him Israel, like his name originally meant deceiver. And then God said, I'm going to rename you as my prince, prince with God. That's what Israel represents. So those networks, really, really speak to the work of God and the commitment of God to family lines. One other one I'll just mention is David's dynasty, King David. His promise from God was that his throne would literally be an everlasting throne, and that would speak to the through his lineage, the Christ would be born into the human race, and of course he was the eternal king, but David was like a type or a figure of what was to come through Christ, but it would be through his, again, through his family line, through his descendants. And so you just think of the powerful stories in the Old Testament to do with family networks. Why do you feel family networks are important to Jesus? Let's transition that a little bit to the New Testament. But why do you think family networks are valuable to Jesus?
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking of some examples. One was Peter's mother-in-law being sick and Jesus taking the time to heal her. So I think like one of the marks of the sharing the journey and sharing this faith journey is needs matter, and we are involved in those needs. And so Jesus saw a relationship that had a need, and he acted. Now, I think that can be extended further to be outside of actual literal families, and maybe that's why I'm thinking more in terms of households as being some sort of special group that we are aware of, because of closeness. And one example I thought too was where Paul in 2 Corinthians 2 was in Troas. Saw an open door to go there, and yet Titus wasn't there. And so he changed his plan because the person was more important than the ministry need. And he, in other words, was sort of part of a household that he needed to respond to. And it just showed where his priorities and his ministry focused. And I thought that was very encouraging. And I see that very applicable to the non-structured household concept we have, where a lot of people don't have family. In our city, a quarter of the residents eat by themselves every day. So that just meant like I'm applying it broader than just a
Yeah,
physical family.
that's really good, Jim. That's so powerful because think about how many single people we know in our world of relationships, and they may not have an immediate personal family. They're part of a family line, but this word oikos comes up in the New Testament, in the Greek New Testament, and of course it's probably used close to 120 times. It's an original word from which the English version used the term church. So oikos speaks of that household theme. Now also there's another word, ekklesia, and that also is translated in English to our use of the word church. So two foundational concepts there. Yeah, any other thoughts, Alex, that you would have on that idea of oikos, or like a set of relationships that may go sort of beyond the family?
Well, I think within the family, it's really key because family see you in your reality. They see you for whom you are. Now, others may see part of our life and think, "Oh, that looks really good," But when we get home and they see our moods and our behaviors and all that thought, that's either where it shines brightly or it's not so bright. And so I think to live out Christ at in the home setting with our own families and their friends makes a difference. And they see us for real. And so that's what's needed. And it can be very convincing when they see the consistency and they see something different than when they go to their friends' homes and see their parents. And they draw a contrast and think, oh, maybe this faith does something because it's really different than the parents of all my other friends, you know? So that's kind of what comes to mind with that.
Wow, that's great, Alex. Yeah, and it speaks to a reality, doesn't it? Like inside of our relational networks, that we don't have to be perfect. In fact, it's probably better that we even be more transparent about our own mess ups and screw ups, appropriately, and share our weaknesses and but our desire also to obey. And sometimes we have to ask our own family members to forgive us for something that we said or did, and that can be powerful in itself, can't it? That lifts up Jesus in the midst of our relationships, and it doesn't lift us up, it lifts him up. Sandy, do you have any thoughts on that, just from what Alex and Jim have shared?
I was thinking with our family, the extension of our married children's in-laws, whether it's sister-in-law, brother, parent in-laws, like parents-in-laws, so we make efforts to initiate with them on different levels. So that our family circle feels like it's expanding to include all those people. And so that's fun. And at Christmas, there's a natural time to just, initiate a little bit more with my daughter's mother-in-law or, sister-in-laws for my kids, because they care and their spouses care about those people, right? So, and it's time that we do spend together from time to time, and they're natural relationships, so that's part of, I think, where some of our focus is recently, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's great. Well, and when you think about this, like that sometimes we have opportunities for our family or relational networks to overlap with each other. And I think another dimension of what you're saying, Jim, is the workplace can be a sphere of relationships, and or part of one's personal community, or it could be an affinity group. You might belong to a certain sports club, or Jim, I know you're part of the local orchestra in your town. And so, our relationships happen on many planes. We actually may have many circles of associations and friendships. And yeah, when you start to think about that, the potential of all that is just amazing. We're talking about Peter, Jim, just a moment ago, and one interesting story about Peter was a breakthrough that he had personally. God actually had to help him take the next step in his personal growth. And we see this in Acts chapter 10, where you remember the story about the sheets dropping down and a picture of these unclean animals that, from Peter's Jewish Old Testament tradition, the Old Testament forbade the eating of these of lobsters and some of these creatures that crawl on the bottom of the sea. And so, Peter was had this revelation from God that all of a sudden, this is now acceptable. And it was kind of like a word picture God gave to Peter to say, Peter, the message that you have here of about God's love and what Jesus has done for us is for all men. It's for the Jews first, but it also is to include the whole world of the Gentiles. And that breakthrough, that's amazing, those chapters, Acts 10, Acts 11, about Peter. But all of that was preparation for him to meet this Roman centurion, Cornelius. And does anything about that story stand out to any of you? Just what stands out in that particular case?
Well, Cornelius didn't know what was that Peter was going through that ahead of time, and so his own obedience and transparency of willing to do what God asked him, he didn't know that the whole thing was being prepared ahead of time. And so I really admire that faith.
So interesting, because the earlier scripture said that he was a God-fearing man, and he was known for doing many good things. And he was told to prepare himself to meet this guy that was going to tell him a little bit more, and reveal to him a little bit more specifically how God's love works in our lives. And then all of a sudden, he sends out these fellows to seek out Peter, and Peter comes to his household. And what happened? You remember, Sandy? Was it just Cornelius that responded?
Him and his household, I believe,
Yeah, it
but
was his whole household, wasn't it? I mean, that's amazing. So that sometimes, like it we think it's one at a time, but households can be touched for God's kingdom. It's very powerful that way. So that again, you just see that whole network potential. Now, this was a breakthrough because you had this Jewish apostle Peter, now starting to make an impact in the Gentile world, and this was a Roman. None of this makes sense in the natural, right? There was all kinds of stuff going on, and I think it just shows me, how much preparation needs to go on for us to be able to make clear God's love for other people. Sometimes for them to discover something fresh and new about God, I need to overcome some of my own hesitations or things that hold me back. Maybe some of my own reluctance. Maybe I'm not into Roman centurions, right? Maybe the thought of that is intimidating, and I don't want anything to do with those kind of people, right? Whatever. And so God often prepares us for the next person that needs to hear the good news. Sandy, you had an interesting opportunity recently at the local garage. Can you tell us that just in a simple way?
Well, I was having my winter tires put on. This is a garage that all of our family, from our oldest child and all my other kids, we all go to them. It's a little family shop. So I've been praying a little bit for more boldness to speak to others. And she was sharing some negative things about Mr. Trump. And I added my 2 cents worth about, the violence in the cities and how things are getting worse. And then I happened to say, well, but I study the Bible and I hear that, it's going to keep getting, it's going to get worse. And there's, so, and I don't know, Ross, what was I sharing? I don't know what my segue was to the gospel, but honestly, she ended up saying, well, I'm not going up and I don't want to go down, so I want to stay in the neutral. She used that word neutral, like, just now might be bad, but it's better than She says, I've had sex before marriage. I've had a child out of a wedlock. And she said something else. So she said, I know I'm not going up. And then I was able to say, oh, you know, it's not based on how good we are. And then the, you know, the gospel, I just said, oh, you know, it's, you know, every, you know, if, you know, there's no sin in heaven. That the problem, there's a problem because we've all sinned. So thankfully, the Bible says it's not about earning your way. Anyway, we had that little chat, right? And then people came in. So yeah. But that's a little connection that we have. Different members of the family popping in, doing their, and then to make it worse, I left without paying. I forgot. Fella fixed the car. He handed me my keys, and I was happy. And she, meanwhile, was talking to somebody else. So I just thought, oh, great. Then I came home, and I don't recall paying. So that doesn't matter with them, right? Because you pay next time you buy. So, but it's a little rapport that we all have with this little group, and the Lord opened the door for me just to have that little chat, and hopefully can pursue that a little bit more, you know. I thought, boy, that might give her hope to hear that.
Well, as you told the story, you said, well, we're all sinners, and that's where the Christmas story comes in. This is a gift that we receive. And you had just brought her a nice little bag with a Christmas gift for her. And you were sharing the story that her brother came in and said, well, how come she got a Christmas gift? I've been here longer than her. And so when
So I
you,
got home.
what
So I came
happened?
home and I called her and I said, "Can do the does your does he like chocolate? Can I get him? Yeah, but not nuts and not fruit." She, I said, "Milk chocolate, dark chocolate, oh, milk chocolate, okay." And she says, "But you can't get him something if you don't get Dan something. That's a cousin." I said, "Okay, fine, two chocolate bars coming." So you know you have that fun banter
Is there?
side. But then you have that little moment, hey? That was really fun for me.
So is that interesting? I was just thinking, well, there's a little family network there that we've gotten to know over the years, and just opportunities just to love on them and serve them and have fun with them. So yeah, you just see the potential of each of our families, each of our family lines. There's of course one other major household and unique in the New Testament, of course, and that's Mary and Joseph's household. And of course, the richness of that story in the opening, chapters of the Gospels, it's so key. But just, literally that God would use Mary as the one who would birth the Christ child into the world, and conceived by the Holy Spirit, and how all that worked out culturally around the engagement with Joseph and all of the dynamics that went on there, the intervention of the angels to help keep everything together. I just see how fresh and dynamic God's work is in these various families in the scriptures, and many of them, like that, none of them were anywhere near perfect. They were all very ordinary people with very challenging circumstances at times. And yet, even by inviting God in fractionally into their world, a foothold gets established, and who knows where that can go. Like, it's like that theme of baby steps, right? As God lays hold of a family. My final question here is, what is one practical way that you find yourself reaching out to your extended family network? And I wonder, as we're grandparents on this call, and so we see it in a couple different ways. We see down to our grandchildren, but we're also very conscious of our own peers, siblings, and cousins. And as we are getting older, we reflect on our parents' generation and grandparents. Like, we're conscious of the lines that we represent in our own little histories, eh? And but I just wonder what other thoughts would you have on that? And then any application, any practical ways in which you find yourself motivated to touch your family network?
Well, I could say one thing you already mentioned is apologizing and asking forgiveness. And I noticed that when we had disputes within our family network, when I apologize for something, my response or whatever it was, others started to do the same thing in the future. They'd start to apologize. And in more broader, not just with a family difficult discussion, but in other things. So just the idea of us acknowledging our mistakes and saying so has caught on. And I think it helps, really helps with relationships, and it probably makes us more sensitive to ourselves in terms of our own behavior and our own sins and stuff like that. And so another way I've found out is, yeah, we have some relatives and family members that are older and having less capacity, and so we can help them and travel and help with practical things regarding, everything, related to living alone and stuff like that. So that's made a big difference, and I believe it expresses the love of Christ. And then I think they put it together when we talk about following Jesus and finding life in Him. They see how it's expressed in the way we serve and help them with their needs.
And I think of listening and asking questions. And you use that in all relationships where this you discover through that shared interests. And then there's things that you think, oh, well, you're interested in that. And here's a good article on that. Or, I've got a question about that now as I've thought of that. And so it's to me, a very easy way to work on relationships. And so listening and asking questions, it also shows sometimes there's, like Alex said, there's a need that you can respond to, because you've focused enough on that situation to understand where the need might be. And then, sometimes I think my main spiritual gift is a gift of uttering, and I find out there's something I can fix, for instance. And I love that in any of the relationships, if there's something practical I can do based on that discovery, and it's just like an investment into the relationship.
I like that, Jim. And the another theme that you are very keen about is that of learning together, and that in the asking of questions, we're connecting with others on a similar path. And it's even though we might be further along age-wise, it doesn't mean that we're further along experience-wise or understanding-wise, because there's always new dimensions to learn in every discovery. And we could be talking to a grandchild and learning things from them or with them. But also that can be quite engaging for them to see themselves on a journey, on a faith journey, working out practical needs, practical stresses at school or on the job or whatever it might be. So yeah, there's just so much, isn't there, that we can offer. I think the one practical thing for me that I find the last year or two that I've been more aware of is the opportunity, kind of the limited window that I think I have with various nieces and nephews. who are coming into early midlife, and life gets complicated at each stage, has its own unique complications. But boy, I just see that as an opportunity to come alongside and try to understand and connect a little bit with their world and see if there's something that we can be of some encouragement to each other. So, just as we round off our time here, just in the next few moments, are there any other thoughts that you would add to this discussion? Just in terms of enlarging our vision for the potential of our family circles. Any other thoughts that come to mind from what we've shared, or any other thoughts you've had?
Well, this might seem an odd prayer request, but Lord, open my eyes to see who is in this family circle. There can be strays, orphans, and exiles that can be included. Or God puts someone on your heart. And in some ways, maybe it's extending the circle to embrace them in the household.
Yeah, I had a friend the other day make emphasis on James 1:27, and which speaks of visiting the widow, visiting the orphan and the widow. So not just give something to them, but actually go visit them. And so that's, in a way, that expanding our circle to include others who may not have a circle that they feel connected to. I know that's something that you feel keenly about, Sandy, is being aware of others in our community who have lost a spouse, and who your children might be quite scattered across the country, but they live largely alone, and how significant, that can be to have a friend.
I was telling someone just today that, oftentimes I bring something to some of these women, but I always make sure I have time when they say, "Can you stay for tea?" Because that's really what they want. And so I'm able to say, "Sure." And I might have an hour there, an hour and a half. But, if you live alone, this woman, one woman's been a widow for 20, 25 years and hasn't moved from her big house, right? And still in the community. So, yesterday it was at my neighbor next door. So she offered me tea. So time, like I just think, what would I want at that stage of my life if my spouse was gone and I'm alone? I think it's the loneliest stage of life, possibly. So what little piece can I help,
Yeah, the gift of time.
Yeah.
Very good.
I like to think of focusing on the relationships within the household and the friends, their friends that come in. Get to know them, ask questions rather than hi, hello, and move on. And that takes effort, but it's great. And looking for ways to serve. And like you said, solve problems. But serve in some way, because it speaks loudly, I think, about love for one another. So looking for those chances to serve our household and the friends of our household starts to build relationships, just like having coffee, like Sandy's talking about. And so I think that's important to pursue.
Very good. Well, I want to thank each of you for jumping on this call as our panel today, and I hope that as others listen in, that they'll be stimulated to think about how God may be at work in their spheres of relationships, in their family circles, and in their local circles that may be part of that. So thank you, everyone, for joining in on the call. God bless you, and we will see you again. Bye for
Thanks
now.
very much.
Bye,
Night.
everyone. Good night.